Hello, Texans, and welcome to the podcast. Okay, the Texans and Browns meet up this week, and I've talked about it a little bit this week that, look, I hate to go back and play the what-if game, but I'm in sports talk radio, and what-if is pretty much what you do every day of your life in sports talk radio. What if this? What if that? What if this happens? Or what if this had happened? How would life be? What if the Texans had beaten the Tennessee Titans a few weeks ago? Heading into this weekend, now forget about the Thursday night game for a moment. Heading into the week, Thursday night game excluded because that's part of the weekend, you would have been 3-5 and two games off the division lead. Think about that for a moment. Now, obviously, whoever plays, plays, and the Colts beat the Titans. Had this happen, which it did, but had the Texans had that extra victory and then beaten the Browns, you're two games behind the Colts for the lead with two dates against them coming up in December and another date against the Titans, who you trail by one game and already have a game in hand. That's how close this thing could be. However, we don't have a DeLorean. We can't go back in time and make that happen. What we do have is the Houston Texans at 2-6. And as I say the record, it makes my skin crawl because it's 2-6. And I did watch Thursday Night Football. And yes, I felt a tad nauseous because the Texans have owned this division, four titles in the last 5 years. Yet you have these two teams playing with pretty nice records in the pandemic. I mean, you had a 5-3 team. You had a 6-2 team. And it all looked very cozy, didn't it, for them. Now, for the Houston Texans at 2-6, not so much. So let's just forget about those guys for a moment. Colts and Titans. And by the way, Titans, really? The Colts own you. You are so different when you play this team. Like, you can't get out of your own way or something. I mean, you had every opportunity in the world to win that football game and could not take advantage. I still don't understand the Colts quite. I mean, John Harris points out a bunch of things like, hey, if Rivers doesn't turn the ball over, they've got a really good defense. They're not running it the way they want to, but they can hurt a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And we'll find out ourselves in December if that's true. Now, as far as the Texans go, playing the Browns is no picnic. Boy, I would love to play the Browns of 3-4 years ago. Wouldn't that be delightful? To play a Browns team that had only one win or no victories and just think, all you got to do is survive. Yeah, they've got some good players, but find a way to just get out of there with a victory and go to 3-6. However, this is not the case. They are 5-3. This is their best campaign since the Texans last went up there in 2014. And plenty of talk about that matchup this week because it was Ryan Mallett against Brian Hoyer. Watt caught a touchdown pass. He was asked about it, said the thing he really remembers is two roughing the punter penalties. I mean, he was getting after that punter, but a little bit too close. Not social distancing enough with the punter for J.J. Watt that afternoon. And the Texans did win the game. Alfred Blue ran for well over 100 yards. I remember going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the night before, and it is a heck of a place. I mean, I know it's pandemic time here, but if you ever have a chance to make it, it's a great museum. Never mind the hall aspect of it, because I could complain all day long about halls of fame for artists, and these people are artists, and some of the criteria about getting in, I don't quite agree with. Some of the people who are in, I'm like, really? And some of the people who are not in, like Pat Benatar, I say, really? But we don't have to get into that right now. I'm not here to talk about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame snubs. I could probably do that in an off-season podcast, and we could have a good time with it. But it's a cool place. It's actually a very cool city. And I think that's what people say about Cleveland as a city. Hey, it's actually because they assume that you think it stinks. And Cleveland has really come a long way since its rust belt status, since the steel industry started to go belly up. I mean, they've reinvented themselves. But, you know, right now it's pandemic time and it's affecting everybody and the economy, and we don't have to get into all of it. Let's get into the game a little bit. Did you know that through the first 4 weeks of the season, when Nick Chubb was healthy and Kareem Hunt's out there, they were leading the NFL in rushing, the whole league. This is with the Ravens going nuts early on in the season. And that's who the Browns were. However, it dropped off dramatically when Chubb got hurt. They suffered some losses, but they're still 5-3. I mean, here you are. I mean, I'd love to be 5-3 at the halfway point. Love it. But you're not. Now, you got to go up there and engineer a victory. Shaky at running back with the David Johnson and concussion protocol all week stuff. And how are you going to get your rushing yards? Watson, Duke Johnson, player X, short passing game. Okay. However, you're looking at 30 to 40 mile per hour gusts on Sunday and possibly rain, temperatures in the 40s. You know, if it's wet in the 40s and really windy, that feels like the 20s. That feels awful. As far as weather games go, the biggest example that I have personally about this is going to Chicago in 2004, and it's like 2 or 3 degrees at kickoff, but we were all geared up for it. We knew it was going to be that way. I had heated socks. I was doing push-ups during the break. It was really cold. Don't get me wrong. It was brutal. The booth had no heat. I was doing push-ups during commercials just to keep the body heat going. Could not have a bottle of water up on the desk where our stuff was because it would just freeze. Like within minutes, it would freeze. It was that cold. We had to keep the water in the cooler to keep it from freezing because the cooler is insulated. I mean, it was like that. Anyway, we got through that one. But the next week, the Texans go to Jacksonville. And the temperature, it was a really cold December North Florida day, just one of those cold for North Florida even days, and it was around 35 degrees and windy and rainy, and it felt colder to us. I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't expecting that. I had to borrow a jacket from Andy Hudak, our engineer at the time, and I was much colder that game than I was in Chicago because we just weren't prepared for it. And when you have wind and rain and everything, it just feels worse. Now, the team will be ready. They're fully prepared for this stuff. They'll be ready. But the thing that I don't know that they know, or they might not know until they get there and start playing, is how they're going to move the football efficiently if it's really windy. Like, will Watson be able to throw the deep ball as well? You would think not. Can we throw the intermediate passes? Yeah, you would think so. But easier said than done. And now the Browns are gearing up for that sort of thing. And they might be able to run the football because last I checked, the Texans have difficulty stopping the run. Now, James Robinson last week for the Jags had 99 yards, which wasn't a ton, but it was still 99. You know, if he gets 99 and you have Hunt going nuts and Chubb comes back and everything, come on. You got a good situation for Cleveland. And they're coming off a bye. We'll see what wrinkles they put in, if any. I'm just hoping that somehow, some way, the Texans find a way to do it. Now, the Browns did close their facility Friday morning, and as I'm recording this, it's just closed, and you would figure they'd get right back to it on Saturday. And the thing I say about the pandemic regarding NFL teams is this. They have a really good understanding of contact tracing, how this stuff works. They do a tremendous job. People on the business side of the Houston Texans who have been affected by COVID obviously have no contact with football people. They're in a different tier, as we call it. But even the business side people, the football contact tracers are all over you to find out who you've been around and where the thing might have come from and, you know, is it in the building anywhere else and that kind of thing. As far as players or anybody on the football staff, anybody in that top two-tier element, as far as they go, if they test positive, it is an all-out investigation to see what happened. And if they shut down the facility for a day, fine. The next day, everybody comes back. They're testing 100 to 150 people a day on the football side of things. They have a very good understanding of spread of, all right, if this guy doesn't, if he's not going to get it in a 4 or 5 day period, he's probably not going to get it. I know it goes up to 14 days, but look, they have way more data to look at than almost anybody. I mean, I would be shocked if medical experts from around the globe don't question sports teams, especially NFL teams, that test every day about what they think of spread, because NFL teams should know with all the testing they're doing. Anyway, enough on that. So the Browns, all the NFL teams affected. Remember the first 3 weeks of the season, there was nothing, and then all of a sudden the Titans and then a couple of other teams, and now I've lost track of how many teams have been affected by COVID or having to shut down their facility. The Texans did during the bye, but that was no big deal. And then they got it going. Last week they had to do it once. But the thing is this, you're practicing so much these days. If the Browns only miss a Friday, I know Friday's a big day, and you do miss some timing, but as far as schematics go, you have plenty of time. The game plan's already in. Saturday, you're at your facility. You don't have to fly anywhere, so you can get some walkthrough stuff done. You don't want to go full out, although some coaches have. Remember the Chip Kelly, go light on Friday, go full on Saturday morning, but not for that long, and then be ready for the Sunday game. That was kind of a college way of doing things. I digress. Texans, Browns, Sunday, looking forward to it. Hopefully you can start stacking wins and make December really interesting. Look, I'm interested every Sunday. I think it's really interesting just to watch two NFL teams play, especially my team on a given Sunday afternoon. I kind of ignore the record, just have a good time watching the game and see what happens, and then take the rest from there. All right, let's get to Jamie Roots. He's the president of the Texans. Now, a few thoughts on Jamie before we bring him aboard here. You know, Jamie's been with the organization from the get-go. And the best way I can put it is this. I'm not trying to be insulting or dismissive of the football side when I say this about Jamie Roots, but there's a reason why the Texans have sold out every game in the history of the franchise. It's not just because Houston loves pro football. Remember, the Oilers were really good for a long time. They had a 7-year stretch where they made the playoffs every year, and they still couldn't sell out consistently. They still needed a supermarket to buy some tickets on a Friday to lift the blackout. Those were in the days of the blackout when you couldn't watch your team on a Sunday afternoon if they were playing at home if the game wasn't sold out in time. Can you imagine that now? I mean, they took that away, but at the time it was a very important rule. It was a Pete Rozelle rule, the old NFL commissioner. In any case, they had trouble selling out, and the Texans haven't because they take care of the customer. And now they know that they can't win every game. This is obvious. You have no control over what happens on the field if you're Jamie Roots, virtually. You're the president of the organization. Now, he controls the whole game day atmosphere and video board, and you know that's my department, but he oversees everything, every aspect of game day, parking, all that stuff. And he's got a great team of managers beneath him, but it's his vision of what happens on a game day. And look, early on in Texans history, they put on games, they saw what worked, they saw what needed improvement, they went through everything, every single moment, every single game, and made it better. His whole thing, and I work for the guy, he's my boss, his whole thing is, oh, great job. How can you make it better? It's always about how can you make it better. You know, he doesn't say this, I think, in this way, but it's like if you don't move up, you're moving down. If you stay the same, you're backsliding. It's just that way. And I know you've heard that in sports. That is true with business, and especially in this business, because there's always somebody doing it better, stronger, better, faster, better, whatever. You want to take care of people, your customers, your clients, meaning the people in the stands, also your sponsors, everybody involved in the organization, and you want to take care of people around Houston. That's why the Texans give back so much to the Houston Texans Foundation, and that's all overseen by him. Now, it's Mr. McNair's vision, okay? And Jamie's the first to tell you that Bob McNair is his hero. Bob wanted to create an organization that not only wins on the field, but does do great things for Houston, that is a pillar in the community, and that's what he's done. Now, Jamie Roots is the president. He oversees the business operations side of things, which affects so many things. You heard Cal McNair recently on with me talking about, hey, Jamie Roots is on this search with me. He's helping me out with this search. He's been involved with so many. He's a super smart guy, knows all about systems, about analyzing things and how to make things better. So why not have him involved? Anyway, let's start here. Jamie's written a book called The Winning Game Plan, and it's not really about building a football team as far as a 53-man roster. It's about building a football organization and everything involved with it. And it's really interesting to get a look into all these elements of running a sports franchise that you might not have even thought of. But he's written the book. It's out there on Amazon right now, The Winning Game Plan by Jamie Roots. And I began by congratulating him.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. I know you're an author as well, and you've got one coming out.
Well, soon enough. But we're here to talk about yours. And look, I love this idea because there's so much that goes on within the organization, operating the organization, that so many people never see and never know about, but they feel the results, if you will, when they go to a Texans game. Why write the book? Tell us the reasoning.
Well, I really wanted to share the fundamental principles that have been so effective for us as an organization, and actually dating back to running the Columbus Crew in Major League Soccer, and in hopes that it could help folks in their leadership journey. None of it's really revolutionary. It's fairly fundamental. But I've spent a lot of time studying, reading, listening, interviewing, talking to leaders, and wanted to put that in one place so that hopefully it can help folks to be better leaders, because we all need better leaders in society.
Well, speaking of leadership, you've had to be at your very best in this last year, the last 9 months or so. Obviously, every year is a challenge in every business, professional sports included. But this year, with the coronavirus pandemic, how has it been different? Take us through a little bit of that journey, operating the business successfully through everything we've been experiencing.
Well, I'll tell you, just the, there's some things that I've had to do to transition our organization to get us refocused on a revised set of priorities, really. But the most important thing has been the people that we have within our organization, the talent within the Houston Texans, the culture that we have that is so resilient, and our, you know, our focus on our purpose of winning championships, creating memorable experiences, and doing great things for Houston. The other thing that is really important is the relationships that we've built over a long period of time, and our ability to preserve those through this situation has been absolutely critical. That's been our focus. There are two things when I talk about the machine of the Houston Texans, there are two things that are so critically important: the people that work within our organization and the relationships that we have within our community. That's the machine. And so we've worked very hard this year to protect the machine.
How has operating through other adverse situations in the history of the Texans, numerous hurricanes, other instances, how has that helped you now? What are some of the things you've learned along the way that maybe can benefit everybody?
Yeah, well, anytime you're facing adversity, there are a couple of things that are really important, and I talk about it in the book. Number one is you have to push back. You have to say, I am not giving in to this challenge. Number two is you have to be positively focused, and you've heard that phrase a lot. You really embrace the positive within the situation that you're in and focus on the things that you can control. If you can't control it, don't worry about it. Just focus on what you can control. Number three is to believe, you know, we can overcome this. Walt Disney was positioned as a, he was interviewing for a job at a newspaper, and they did not get the job because he had no original ideas. But he believed in himself and he kept going, and it was really, I mean, that's what you have to do. And then number four is just persevere. You know, you just have to keep going. The difference between winning and losing is so often, you know, how long you give it before you give up. And just keep going. And these are all basic things, but these are things that we've learned through the adversity that we've faced as an organization. Unfortunately, this has been about 7 months, a hurricane that lasted 7 months. Yeah. And so we've had to really be very disciplined in our application of those adversity plays.
Well, and we're still kind of in the storm right now, so let's hope it ends soon. Jamie Roots joining us, author of The Winning Game Plan. All right, those of us who know you know your story, and it's so interesting. How much of this do you share? And go ahead and share some of it right now. Why did you decide, and how did you decide, to work in sports?
Yeah, well, I'll share a little bit in the book, but more importantly, I really wanted to make sure that the ideas mm-hmm. that can be effective for people are what is down on paper, right? So there's not a ton of it. I decided to work in sports because athletic competition has been so central to my life. I mean, from the time that I was a kid through college, I left and I worked in a traditional business. I really tried, I promise, to be in a traditional business. I was at IBM for several years. It didn't really take. I was at Procter & Gamble. Didn't really inspire me. And so, and it's not that those are not great organizations. They're great companies, both of them leading in their industries, right? But I there's something about athletic competition, the drama, and you and I align on this, drama, the excitement, the energy, even if you lose, it's better than being in the middle. Even if you're at the depths of your sorrow, it's better than just being monotone day after day. And so that's just something that was important to me. And while my approach to running the Houston Texans has always been very much, you know, Wall Street Journal, best practice business application, I couldn't do it in a traditional business. It had to be something that gave me that level of energy and passion and excitement.
Well, those of us in the building know that you shape the entire business side of the operation like a team, like a gigantic team. And you were on such a successful team, multiple teams in soccer at Clemson, winning 2 national championships. I know you're very humble about it. If it were me, I'd wear a hat that said that and I'd walk around every day like that. But tell us what you learned from there. I know it's got to be a lot of things, but a couple of central ideas that you learned playing on championship teams that apply to what you're doing today and what everybody can use out there.
Yeah, so it was 1987, and I was on a bus riding to the national championship game. And I was with my best friend, Paul Rutenis. And Paul said to me, Jamie, we have to play the game anyway. We might as well win it. And at that moment, it really struck me. And we did. We won it. And we won. We were champions. But I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? We had overcome being the last team selected in the NCAA tournament. We had to go on the road to Evansville, to Indiana, that had never lost in the playoffs at home. Had to go to Rutgers with Lexi Lawless. Wow. And then we're playing in the championship game after beating North Carolina, who had beaten us 4-0 during the season. If we don't win this game, we walk away with nothing. Mm. You have to commit to winning. It's an attitude. It's not, I mean, yeah, you can't win every time, but every time you step on the field, every time you go into the boardroom, every time you have a negotiation, play to win. Mm-hmm. Whatever that outcome is that you're looking for, commit to it. You may not get it, but if you don't commit to it, if you're wishy-washy, if you're not really clear about what you want, you're never going to be successful.
Right.
So commit to what you want and go make it happen. And that is the most important thing that came out of the time that I spent at Clemson.
All right. You talked about what you learned from your best friend, Paul, and that seems to stay with you. And I know you learn from everybody you talk to, but give us a couple of key influences in your life, people that you've interacted with, worked with, that have been big influences on you and the way you operate, Jamie.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the three most important were, number one, at Indiana University, when I was, worked with the team and got my MBA, Jerry Yeagley. Jerry Yeagley was a head men's soccer coach there. And just the way that he conducted himself and the way that he organized the program, it isn't about your environment. You can create something truly world-class wherever you are. I mean, it's not like the soccer program at Indiana University was, I mean, it's not changing people's lives. But the way that Yeagley ran it, incredible respect. You just, you had to respect it. You had to revere it. The principles that he used were so effective. And then going to Columbus with the Columbus Crew, Lamar Hunt, the guy with the highest integrity. I mean, the most humble man maybe I've ever met in my life. I mean, somebody had, you know, as successful as he's been, to be that humble was really remarkable. And at the service at the end of his life, one of his friends, Jack Stedman, got up and said, "When God made man, he had Lamar Hunt in mind."
Wow.
And there's not a better statement about that man. And then, of course, Bob McNair, who I have dedicated this book to, just he changed my life. He changed the trajectory of my life and my family's life. He taught me so much. In fact, I told someone, I told him the last time we visited before he passed away, that The Bible and church is all about providing you a guide to live. Okay. You want to live a Christ-like life, and nobody can ever live to that standard, but nobody's ever embraced that more or been more effective at it than Bob McNair.
A remarkable man, no question about it. The founder of the Houston Texans. Okay. What do people, this is a good one, because I think that those of us who work in professional sports, obviously we encounter a lot of interactions with people where they don't really understand the business side of things. What do people not understand about the way a professional sports franchise operates and the way it needs to operate properly? They see the product on the field or the playing surface. What do they not see that's really important that everybody can sort of glean something from?
Yeah, I think most importantly that I love football. Mm-hmm. I watch football on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. If they're going to show it on Tuesday, I'm going to watch it too. Yeah. But very little of our success has to do with what you see on the football field. Our success is driven by our ability to create an environment for our fans that is unavailable anywhere else. The ability to bring people together, to share their company, to provide a level of energy and excitement. And you have to be committed to winning. But it isn't about winning. It's about the community looking at this franchise and seeing themselves in us. And if we can do that well, we can withstand whatever happens on the football field. Now, if you go 0-16 for 10 years, people are probably going to check out. But then what kicks in there is our commitment to winning. If you're committed to winning, you're probably not going to go 0-16, right? You're going to take the corrective actions to get yourself in a better place. But it isn't all about that. I've heard people say, if we win, everything will take care of itself. That's not true. That's not true. What is true is be an organization that the community can see themselves in and do great things for your community. If we do those two things really well, we'll be successful.
Well, and you need the right people on your roster. So give us a couple of tidbits on the hiring philosophy of you and the Houston Texans, how you operate.
Yeah. Well, nothing that we do. I mean, we're not NASA. Okay. We're not the CDC. We don't need rocket scientists, right? So what we need is people that have three things: the fundamental non-negotiables, people with a great work ethic, because unfortunately, to do what we do, it takes a lot of time. Okay, mm-hmm. You have to be committed to it. Number two is a winning attitude, positive, optimistic, team-oriented. You got to like people. You have to be one of those type of people to be successful with the Houston Texans. And number three is you have to be interested in operating in a manner consistent with our values. Be innovative. Be memorable. Be passionate. Be accountable. Be courageous. Be a team player. And if you have those three things, you can be successful at the Houston Texans. As I think back at all the people that we have had to part ways with, rarely does it have to do with your performance. Almost always it has to do with attitude, work ethic, values alignment.
That's great stuff. And it sounds like you'll be successful in pretty much anything if you operate that way, if you conduct yourself.
It's available. Let me tell you, attitude and work ethic is available to everyone. You just have to choose to do it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of great stuff in this book and a lot of people are going to benefit from it. And it's exciting. Do you talk about the birth of the franchise and Mr. McNair? And I've read excerpts of the book, but not the entire thing yet.
Yeah. Well, one of the more emotional stories is when Bob McNair passed. And while, you know, it does weigh heavy on my heart, just that window of time. It was so incredibly gratifying to see the response of our organization to that. to have to put together, you know, in a flash, a remembrance for Bob on Monday Night Football, and then to host a celebration of his life at NRG Stadium. Part of me was concerned that we couldn't handle all that. But in the instance when I was asked, you know, can we make that happen? I saw your face. I saw John Schriever, and I saw Disney Harris, and I saw all the people that would have to be a part of that. And everyone shaking their head. I got it. We got this. And it just was another reminder of the whatever it takes attitude that exists within our building. And that doesn't happen overnight. You know, I mean, you talked about handling adversity. Once you hit adversity, if you don't have the right people, if you don't have the right culture, if they're not all bought in, you're toast. You are not going to be able to handle what comes. And fortunately for us, we have such incredibly talented and committed people that understand what we're trying to get accomplished, and they buy in that whatever comes, I'm not concerned. We're going to be able to handle it.
Jamie, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Mark. Good to see you, buddy.
There he is, president of the Houston Texans, Jamie Roots. Check out the winning game plan. Get it on Amazon right now, or soon enough, anyway. Anyway, we want to thank you all for being with us today on the podcast, and check out all the other Texans podcasts wherever you got this one. Don't forget, Texans-Browns, Sunday at noon. It'll be on Sports Radio 610, the Bull 100.3 FM on Fox as well. Have a great day, everyone, and go Texans.